Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 12th of February 2020, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. And well, we're coming on to the key question: is free media safe?
Well, no, as we've been warning for quite some time, but everybody would be glad to know that Ofcom is to be appointed as the new internet regulator to deal with online harms. So this comes alongside the publication of the initial response from the government to the online harms white paper consultation, which took place at the end of last year, if you remember. So Nicky Morgan and Priti Patel have jointly announced that they are minded to appoint the communications watchdog Ofcom as the regulator to enforce rules to make the internet a safer place. This is spectacular stuff. What are they talking about? Let's have a look. They're talking about basically a statutory duty of care to protect users from harmful and illegal terrorist and child abuse content. So platforms will need to ensure that illegal content is removed quickly and minimize the risk of its appearing in the first place. Apparently they're going to do this while safeguarding free speech. So we don't need to worry, Brian, because they're going to safeguard free speech. We'll come on to that in the context of that a little bit later. They're going to defend the role of the press. Well, this was a pretty key part of the whole online harms program that was originally announced by Matt Hancock. Of course, the government extremely concerned about the status and the ability of the corporate press to continue to exist. So they need to shore it up in some way. So this is all about defending the role of the press. The mainstream press, we need to stress there. It's only going to apply, this particular regulation is only going to apply to companies that allow the sharing of user-generated content. So only 5% of businesses apparently in the UK will be affected by this. It'll be anybody that's running an internet platform, for example, Facebook or Twitter, or anybody that's running a special interest forum, like the Professional Pilots Rumour Network or the UK Column. Any of these types of organisations will fall under the remit of this regulation. And decisions on the processes and the procedures will be taken by Ofcom, because although the legislation is going to give guidance and basically a framework for this, it's going to be down to Ofcom to decide how this is actually implemented on the ground.
And encourage people to remember that sentence, that it's going to come down to decisions taken by Ofcom, because we're going to have a glimpse in a minute as to how they take decisions, really.
Absolutely. So let's see what Nicky Morgan and Priti Patel had to say. And Nicky Morgan said, with Ofcom at the helm, a proportionate and strong regulatory regime, we have an incredible opportunity to lead the world in building a thriving digital economy driven by groundbreaking technology that is trusted by and protects everyone in the UK.
Well, again, I've got to comment on this because I'm seeing this for the first time as this news is going out live. This is giving the impression that Ofcom is doing a bit more than just sort of regulating. It's helping to build.
Yes, indeed. And what did Priti Patel have to say? Well, she said this: while the internet can be used to connect people and drive innovation, we know that it can also be a hiding place for criminals, including paedophiles, to cause immense harm. And my first reaction when I saw that, Brian, was, well, we could also mention the House of Commons there. So the internet, a hiding place for criminals, including paedophiles. House of Commons has some questions.
Well, of course, Westminster doesn't want to go near that, and we can have a whole debate on that, why not. But just fascinating, isn't it? Is Ofcom independent organisation?
Well, we'll come in onto that, I'm sure, in a second. But before we do that, let's just see what Ofcom had to say, because they were very excited by it. And they said that they share the government's ambition to keep people safe online.
Right.
There you go. So what can we say about Ofcom then?
Well, I think the first thing that we ought to say is we probably need to be a little bit careful about Ofcom. If you go to their site, and of course we encourage our viewers and listeners to go and research what we're saying for themselves, you'll see that there's a lot about copyrights, but essentially we're able to use their material. That's good, isn't it? We've got to make sure everybody knows it's come from Ofcom, so we're putting up their statement on their copyright so that there can be no doubt that we're doing exactly what Ofcom would wish us to do. Otherwise, we'll be in the naughty boys club.
Okay.
Well, let's have a look at Ofcom. Well, the first place we always go to is to have a look at the people, and these are the key players. But we went through these individuals just to have a look at their CVs and see really who we were dealing with. So let's see what we've got. We've got Lord Burns here. Now, his background is Santander banker and an advisor to the Treasury. One of the reasons, Mike, why I was interested whether Ofcom's got a little bit more to do than just keeping us safe. It's helping develop business in the communications industry. And of course, if you've been in banking and advisor to the Treasury, you might be considered to be well placed to know exactly how that big business works. Now, this gentleman has been replaced, more on that in a minute, but Jonathan Oxley has been replaced as the interim CEO. We've got a new CEO in place, but he's the chief executive officer of the UK Regulators Network. He's ex-PricewaterhouseCoopers, so he's into big business as well. But all of these people are integrated into a range of other businesses and networks and NGOs. So it's very difficult to know how independent they are when making decisions. We've got Maggie Carver, ex-investment banking and a media corporate. So this woman has been really in the heart of corporate media. We've got Graham Mather. We're going to do a little bit more on him. President of the European Policy Forum. He's ex-Mergers and Monopolies Commission. We've got a Dutchman, Ben Verwaaien, investment fund, ex-CEO BT and Endemol, which is a big Dutch media company. We've got Bob Downes, he's chair of the Scottish Environment Protection Agency. So in contrast to the others, this man has come in from a different area. So they're not all tarred with the same brush. We've got Angela Dean, she's the Audit and Risk Board member. She's an ex-financial analyst, and her background, of course, is banking, Morgan Stanley, but also some connections with the UN. And we've got David Jones, board member for Wales. He's tied in with the Bevan University Health Board and the Welsh Revenue Authority. So his job is to help the Welsh government hoover up more money. And of course, media is a big source of money. And we've got Tim Souter, who's the chair of the Content Board. I've just labelled him ex-BBC for the moment. But the new lady is Dame Melanie, and she's a top civil servant, housing, but she's housing and local government, but she's also been advisory to the Treasury. And,
it goes beyond that, Brian, because here she is, Dame Helen Dawes. She started her career as an economist, spent 15 years at the Treasury, including as Europe Director. She was Director General of the Economic and Domestic Affairs Secretariat at the Cabinet Office between 2011 and 2015. And she also served on the board of HMRC as Head of Business Tax. So perfect person to, coming from the Cabinet Office to...
So this is a highly political person. However you looked at her, her background is right at the heart of government.
Yes.
Although as a civil servant, she would say, oh, of course, I'm beyond politics. Mm. But I wonder whether that's the case. Well, let's follow through, because here's the chairman, Lord Burns, senior advisor to Banco Santander, a member of the House of Lords Economic Affairs Select Committee, chairman of the Young Classical Artists. Lots of interests. But you can see that at the background, a lot of big business banking. We've got Marks and Spencer's, Welsh Water, even got the National Lottery Commission. And we can see there 2004 to 2006, he was, quote, independent advisor to the Secretary of State on the BBC Charter Review. The BBC is going to be part of this analysis from us. It's very important.
I noticed the Channel 4 television corporations in there as well.
Yes.
Well, yes. Yeah, so how do you regulate and when you're part of the industry?
Well, previous appointment. So was a previous appointment.
He just burned all his friendships.
This is what we don't know, and it's a question which could be asked of many of their board members, what their connections are and how independent they are in making decisions for Ofcom. But he's going to go shortly because a new chair is going to be appointed. The government says we're going to give Ofcom a new chair because we want the new chair to see all of these new responsibilities and reforms through. So we don't know who that is. That's still to be announced, it would appear. But one of the gentlemen on the board was this man, Graham Mather. He was Ofcom board and president of the European Policy Forum. Now, we went and had a look for the European Policy Forum. Very strange little website. This is what it said. The forum's highly regarded for its expertise in the financial, energy, telecoms and other regulated sectors. So this is almost like a private regulatory advice service. And it goes on to say that it's chaired by Lord Tugendhat, a former parliamentarian, regulator, European commissioner and chairman of leading companies who succeeded the founding chairman, Lord Hunt of Tamworth.
That would be the same. That would be the uncle then of Tom Tugendhat, who's currently the chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee. So we've got banking and politics. It's all a bit incestuous between the two, isn't it?
It is. Well, if we go in, there's only two people, although they talk a lot about people, a lot of people who are helping advise the European Policy Forum. I could only find two faces on the website. And here we've got Lord Tugendhat here as chairman of the European Policy Forum, and we've got Graham Mather as president. He advises hedge funds on EU issues. Now, what I found interesting was that if you know what's happening within the telecommunications industry, you must be well placed to offer advice on how people who are backing that sort of business are going to use that information. We're not suggesting in any way he is, but it's something somebody may ask. So here's the content board. And we've got all the names on screen. Let's have a look at what connects them. We've got Dr. Alid Erug. He's ex-BBC. We've got Tony Close, champion of viewer, listener, citizen and audience safety and inclusion assurance. So he's a very cuddly man. We've got Janie Walker, ex-Channel 4 and ex-BBC. We've got Robin Foster, ex-BBC. We've got Kevin Backhurst, ex-BBC. We've got Tim Souter, who's chair of the content board. He's ex-BBC. Manisha Shah, who's ex-BBC, and a little bit more on her in a minute. Jonathan Baker, ex-BBC. Maggie Cunningham, ex-BBC. We've got a few who aren't, and Angelina Fusco, who's ex-BBC. So this is quite extraordinary, Mike, isn't it, for an independent organisation that's discussing and making decisions to keep us safe in a media sense. So here's Tim Souter. This is what Ofcom says about him. So we've taken this straight from their site. Thank you for providing that information. So he was appointed in 2017 by the Secretary of State for Digital Culture, Media and Sport. And if you have a look at this, he in 1999, he joined the Department for Culture, Media and Sport as a specialist advisor. And then he's put in charge of overseeing the 2003 Communications Act and the creation of Ofcom.
Yeah.
So you come straight out of the political arena into Ofcom to follow up your project. And there at the bottom, it says he started his media career in the BBC. Now, what interested me on this page is that there's some qualifications. It says the Secretary of State appointed Tim. The appointment has been made under the Cabinet Office's Governance Code on Public Appointments. And then if you read on a bit more, it gives a salary, a mere £42,500. But in accordance with the Cabinet Office Government Code on Public Appointments, any significant political activity undertaken by an appointee in the last 5 years must be declared. And it says this is defined as holding office, public speaking, making recordable donation or a candidature for election. Now, we're not just singling out Tim here. When you go through the Ofcom people, you have no way of telling whether they are connected with a whole range of organisations and if some of that connection is political. It's not very clear. This is more detail on him. And here you can see, as well as working with major international media companies across the UK, Europe, Africa and the Middle East, Tim has also been a special advisor to the House of Lords Communication Committee and the Council of Europe concerning the governance of public service media. So these are very powerful people, but at the moment they've sort of dropped all that, it would appear, and now we can sit here very relaxed because they're going to look after our needs for honest media. Well, how does Ofcom conduct its business? We had a look at one set of minutes, and let's see how this pans out, because this was the meeting on the 1st of October 2019, where amongst other things they were discussing the BBC. So let's remind ourselves, here's the members present. We've got Tim, BBC, we've got Kevin, BBC, we've got Aled Erug, BBC, we've got Robin. Let's just put them on. But essentially, we've got a whole raft of ex-BBC people in a meeting discussing the BBC. How do you feel about that, Mike?
They're independent, of course.
They're independent. Yep, we need to reassure the public that they are, of course, independent. And here's some of the detail of the minutes. And this was, I found astonishing, because there was a declaration of members' interest. This is number seven. And it says that Monisha Shah declared the recent appointment of her brother, Mohit Bakaya, as the new controller of BBC Radio 4. So she declares that she's got a close family member appointed within the BBC, but she appears to remain in the meeting.
Oh, surely not. Surely she recused herself immediately.
Well, there's nothing in the minutes that I saw, and it was declared there as a member's interest. It didn't then say she recused herself. Now, we were so interested, we did speak to Ofcom this morning and ask about this. They promised a reply. I haven't seen that reply yet, but as soon as we get it, we will, of course, broadcast it. So let's have a look. This is partly what they were discussing. The BBC annual report and performance, annual report and performance report. And what is fascinating when you read through this is it's almost though they are worried about whether the BBC is actually performing as the BBC. It was broadly delivering on its remit through provision of news and current affairs with educational, high quality, distinctive and creative content. But findings also showed that the BBC faced challenges to connect with children and younger adults and risk losing these audiences. So Ofcom here seems to be very worried that the BBC, not that it isn't doing its job, but the BBC isn't getting through to younger audiences.
Well, they can't be worried anymore since Greta Thunberg has just been given a new series on the BBC.
Well, perhaps this is part of an Ofcom initiative.
Possibly.
Of course, we've no way of knowing. But let's have a little bit more of those minutes, because it takes us into this area. At the bottom, in attendance, we have some names. We've obviously got the members in attendance. It lists four names and then it says other Ofcom colleagues. Well, who were those colleagues? And why weren't they named? We've also asked Ofcom to do that. But now we can get a glimpse as to how Ofcom conducts his business, because it doesn't matter if you're ex-BBC, it doesn't matter whether you've got family connections with the BBC, you can sit in, it would appear, sit in a meeting and discuss things to do with the BBC. So is this the type of behaviour that Ofcom uses for its other decisions, Mike?
Well, look, to understand the implications of this, because the language that's being used by the government this morning is very placatory. We're going to protect freedom of speech. We're going to make sure that that adults are allowed to express themselves so long as the platforms that they're expressing themselves on publish the rules under which they're allowed to express themselves. Yeah. But there'll be no restriction on what you can say. But let's just keep in mind what's behind this and how we arrived at this point. Really what we're talking about is censorship. And it began with David Cameron's call in 2014 in September at the United Nations General Assembly for calls for regulation of the internet, and particularly people who were concerned about 9/11 and 7/7. And he was really linking this type of discussion with terrorism. And one of the things that we can see from today's announcement is that aside from child abuse as being an excuse for what they're doing at the moment, terrorism is the other excuse. But Cameron set the scene for this by effectively linking the word terrorism with anybody that's questioning official narratives. And official narratives are key here. So let's work our way through this. Then in 2017, Amber Rudd met with the tech companies and really saying at that point that they want to bring regulation in. They want to remove the sort of Wild West aspect of the internet, and that they want the tech companies' assistance in doing this. They published an open letter later, really saying thank you and yes, no problem, we're on board. MPs then asked for Facebook and others to tackle fake news. So we start to see the censorship agenda coming in here. Damien Collins no longer on the select committee that was handling this. So maybe they will have a different agenda at this point. But then, of course, Theresa May, basically what was she saying? That our campaign will also include exploring creating a legal liability for tech companies if they fail to take necessary action to remove unacceptable content. That's more or less what we're looking at the moment. So this began in 2017. Then we had the formation of the Global Internet Forum to Counter Terrorism from the various tech organizations. And of course, remember, terrorism, according to Cameron at least, includes anybody with a counter narrative. Then we had the fact that Google was starting to change their algorithm, and which was starting to see alternative media platforms having the organic search results exclude alternative media platforms. Then we had, of course, the idea that fact checkers are really the only authorities that we can rely on, and indeed we need to consider trust as being a big part of the media. So we've got the likes of the Trust Project being established. Then we've got Theresa May announcing internet regulation at Davos. Then we've got the moves to protect the mainstream media. So really, Matt Hancock and the Cairn Cross Review, all about shoring up the mainstream media. This is another issue that's been raised with today's announcement. They've got to protect the mainstream press. Then Theresa May established the Rapid Response Unit within the Cabinet Office, and this is all about looking at what narratives there are out on social media and making sure the government can respond rapidly to those and put out the truth, in inverted commas. Not to be confused with the Rapid Response Unit, Theresa May then announced the Rapid Response Mechanism, which was announced at the G7 in 2018. Where she was basically saying that the Western nations, the G7 nations, would carry a common narrative on any event that happens to happen on the planet. They would make sure that there was a common narrative, and they would make sure that that common narrative was in the mainstream press. But, you know, alternative media, that's a problem for them. And then we had the Online Harms White Paper published in April last year, and a public consultation which ended on the 1st of July last year. And today's announcements, of course, are the first response to that public announcement. But really, when you look at the way that this has developed over the last several years, Brian, we are not looking at the protection of freedom of speech as being the prime motivator in this whole agenda, quite the opposite. And the use of child sexual exploitation and child abuse online, and the use of these types of problems, which everybody agrees need to be dealt with.
Yeah, they're emotive problems, which is why they're using them.
They're being used as a cover for what the government really wants to see, which is the reinforcement of the mainstream press and the narratives that the mainstream press seems to be happy to promote on behalf of governments, and the suppression of any dissenting voice.
And we've got coupled with this, and I think it is a key thing, this is not just government and the media. We've also got big business at the back of this. We know, of course, how much money is being made through the media, BBC hoovering up £4 billion plus, very big money. So we're bound to have the interests of the banks and the hedge funds and anybody else who's making money off media there in the background as well. So transparency at the moment over this issue is almost zero. It's a clampdown of free speech. Can we just say very nicely to our viewers and listeners, if we've raised enough interest in your minds in this segment and you want to ask more questions of Ofcom, can we encourage you to do that? We suggest just one or two questions per letter or email, and of course, do it in a polite, reasonable, measured way, because that has most effect. And we will be very interesting to see what sort of answers you get. But if the public doesn't challenge Ofcom on what it's actually doing here, of course, all these measures are going to be slid in place. Mm.
So if you like what the UK Column does and you would like to support us, then please head over to ukcolumn.org/community. There are options to help us out there. Your help much needed and much appreciated. Well, good news, Brian. The NATO Defence Ministers meeting is taking place at the moment. And it's going to address key issues, including NATO's training mission in Iraq, the fight against international terrorism. They're going to talk about NATO's presence in Afghanistan. They're going to talk about Russia, of course, the big challenge of Russia and Russia's missile systems. And they're also going to talk about NATO-EU cooperation, because, of course, burden sharing is the code word for defence union. And building security in the Middle East as well, nuclear deterrence is going to be on the agenda. And Ben Wallace is there representing the UK, so that's got to be good news.
Do you think he might learn a bit more about what's happening with EU defence union? Because he hasn't been too sure, has he, over previous months? So maybe there and getting the hot word.
I think he knows very well, but he's not saying very much. And in fact, I just want to highlight this article that went up on the UK column yesterday, Brexit, a deal not done. Because really what we're highlighting here is the fact that the future relationship with the EU, between the UK and the EU, is much more than a trade deal, despite what the British press, British politicians might be telling us. It's much more than a trade deal. And in fact, the defence and security aspect of it is pretty huge. So I do recommend that people have a look at that if they want to understand the situation a bit better. Okay, let's move on to this then. Protecting children, because the British government is all about protecting children. They want to protect children as much as they can. So they're putting strict new measures in place to protect children who are in care. So anybody under the age, any child under the age of 16 in unregulated accommodation, that is going to become an illegal situation in the not too distant future. This is plans announced by Gavin Williamson, who is the Education Secretary. This is tackling growing concerns, they said, about the number of children under 16 being left at risk of exploitation. And they're also going to introduce national standards for unregulated accommodation to improve the quality and security of placements. And they're going to give new legal powers to Ofsted, that's not Ofcom, that's Ofsted, to crack down on illegal unregistered providers who are those providing care for children without being registered to do so. New measures requiring councils and local police forces work together before placements in unregulated settings are made out of area, putting the interests of young people at the heart of decisions. And the first question in my mind, Brian, is why this wasn't the case already. But the other point here, of course, is the British government, the British establishment, local authorities, they all have a spectacularly good reputation historically for regulated accommodation, don't they?
No.
So really, this is nonsense.
Well, the other thing I find interesting, at the moment, we haven't got any proper results from ICSA, the Child Abuse Inquiry. And it might have seemed sensible that you wait until the inquiry delivers its full results in order to say what's happening. But of course, they're not doing that. And we also know, of course, the inquiry itself is still not getting into the real areas of the abuse, and it is not interviewing key witnesses. So what's going on here? I think this is a publicity stunt to give the impression that the government is doing something, but actually nothing has happened. And Ofsted, Well, of course, what's the reputation of Ofsted? When Ofsted was informed about abuse at Oxford and Cherwell Valley College many years ago, a case that we dealt with, it didn't take any proper action. And of course, many of the abuse survivors saying even if they go to NSPCC, for example, that the correct action is not always being taken. Mm. So what is this? I think this is a publicity stunt.
Well, let's just have a quick look at what Gavin Williamson had to say. There are no circumstances where a child under 16 should be placed in accommodation that does not keep them safe. Well, as we said, historically, of course, we only have to look at Beechwood as just one example of a local authority run children's home where the most egregious abuse was going on. And in fact, children died at that location as well.
But nobody wants to talk about that.
No.
And those deaths have still not been dealt with properly by ICSA because they simply said, oh, no, we're just investigating child abuse deaths. Oh, that's a matter for the coroner. That's nothing to do with ICSA. When they were asked, is the death of a child the ultimate abuse? They really didn't want to speak to us. Mm. Well, we can't keep our children safe, but we're making sure that we're keeping tags on every man, woman and child in the country. BBC here crowing because the 2021 census could be the last, because Sir Ian Diamond, who's been the key man helping to run it, has said that he's examining cheaper alternatives. And he said, let's see if we can get to a similar place more quickly. Sorry, that should be using different strategies. And if you think about this, what we're talking about is the state hoovering up all and every bit, which bit of data held by government departments or any of the NGOs or charities or corporations working with the government. All of that information is clearly going to be put on the table so the government can see exactly what each and every one of us are doing. People should find that scary, but I'm not sure it's hit home yet.
Now, of course, Boris Johnson announced that HS2, the high-speed rail line from London to Manchester, would go ahead yesterday. But one other piece of infrastructure development, which has been talked about on and off for a few years now, is the bridge between Scotland and Northern Ireland. So some people on social media, as highlighted by Indy 100 this morning, making fun of this whole thing. Well, there are a couple of, shall we say, challenges, even if this project was to go ahead. So let's just have a look at that. This is from last year when The Sun reported this in September. Bridge over troubled water. Boris Johnson could build bridge between Scotland and Northern Ireland to solve the Brexit backstop. Now, of course, the troubled water was a reference to the backstop. But there's another reason why it's troubled water when it comes to this type of infrastructure. So let's just zoom in on the map there that The Sun has published, because there's two main possible routes that they are highlighting. One is between Torhead in County Antrim and the Mull of Kintyre. Well, if anybody knows that coastline, this is probably not the easiest coastline to land a bridge on, because quite high cliffs. And Torhead in that particular region, I would imagine, is at the very least an area of outstanding natural beauty. So whether they're allowed to proceed with a bridge there, I would doubt very much. But the bigger problem is this route from Larne to Portpatrick, which is 28 miles, but unfortunately has running through the middle of it the Beaufort Dyke. There's quite a lot of unexploded munitions down there, Brian. 14,500 tonnes. Of phosgene containing rockets were dumped there in 1945. So that, of course, is a poison gas. Then there was grenades, mortars, rockets, cluster bombs, anti-aircraft shells, and those rockets all dumped down there. So how they managed to build that, I'm not entirely sure.
Well, we will wait and see. I think this is another announcement in order to give the illusion of breakaway from Brexit, get people's minds onto other things. But we will see. Well, where does that take us? To an extraordinary article. This is The Guardian, and the headline here is BP sets new zero carbon target for 2050. The new chief executive, Bernard Looney, plans a major overhaul of oil and gas company. So I find this very interesting. Is this a turkey voting for Christmas, or have we got something going on? Well, let's have a look at what the loony said. The world's carbon budget is finite and running out fast. We need a rapid transition to net zero. We want all energy that's reliable and affordable, but that's no longer enough. It must also be cleaner to deliver that. Trillions of dollars will be invested in replumbing and rewiring the world's energy system. It will require nothing short of reimagining energy as we know it. This will certainly be a challenge, but also a tremendous opportunity.
Reimagining in the sense of you won't get any. Is that how they reimagine it?
Well, it's difficult to imagine. Mm. It's difficult to imagine. But so this is a carbon company saying, well, we don't really like ourselves and we're going to do something about ourselves. Trillions of dollars are needed. And the loony also said this, that BP would cut its spending on corporate and reputational sponsorship and redirect the funds towards promoting climate action.
Good.
This is the state of the world at the moment, all based on the lie of man-made climate change. But BP is going to vote itself out of business, apparently. So it'll be interesting to see how the shareholders react to that reimagined look at BP in 2050.
Well, look, the key word there is net zero. It's a financial shell game. Oh, yeah. Sorry, no, we're talking about BP, aren't we? Yeah, right.
We'll leave it there. We'll just remind people that we believe that the moves by the government through Ofcom are extremely dangerous. Do your own research. Look at the articles online. Decide what you believe and what you don't. But if you are concerned, then, of course, the only thing to do is to challenge those very people themselves. We will report what Ofcom says in reply to our questions about that very strange meeting to do with the BBC. That's it for today. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.